Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us anytime during the program, our number is 941-3689, 941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands toll-free, 877-941-3689. The final environmental impact statement on the Honolulu Rail Transit Project, approved in June by the Federal Transit Administration, now sits with the state. The Office of Environmental Quality Control will analyze the FEIS, and if they find it complete, they'll send it to the governor. Governor Lingle is already saying she wants to financially review the project after she gets it. The Hanneman administration says that's unnecessary and will only cause a delay in the acceptance of the project. Tonight we'll talk about the final environmental impact statement. Joining us are City Managing Director and soon-to-be Acting Mayor Kirk Caldwell, and also we have with us Transportation Director Wayne Yoshioka. And you too, if you'd like to be here, 941-3689 is our number. You can find us at BKOZHPR on Twitter. That's BKOZHPR on Twitter as well. And welcome to you both.
Hey, Beth Ann, it's great to be on the show. I have to say, this is a great thing you do, and we really appreciate the opportunity, both Wayne and I and the mayor, for getting to come and talk story with you.
Well, nice to have you here. Nice to have both of you here. The rail issue has been, and for some still is, one of the most contentious in our history. It has spanned decades, and despite the outcome of the vote in 2008, opposition to the project continues. What do you think this says about us?
I think it just says anytime you're building a major construction project like this, the largest construction project in the history of our islands, that it's going to be highly controversial. And particularly when you deal with traffic issues, everyone has an opinion. But we welcome the debate. You know, part of the process, this whole process, is that we need to let people weigh in and tell us what they think. And the FEIS, which sits with the governor, is part of that process, going out to the community, getting their input, and responding to the issues that have been raised. And so I think it's actually a good thing, but it is very controversial. This is the fourth time we've tried to build this project. Neil Blaisdell talked about rail. Frank Fossey tried twice. Jeremy Harris tried BRT, bus rapid transit, at grade. He said the opponents then said not at grade. We don't want to take away lane of traffic. Now we're above grade in a sealed system, and now those same opponents are saying it should be back on the street. I think this is just the nature of this kind of project, and we just got to live through it and keep carrying the ball. And Mayor Hanneman has been the team leader, the captain who has carried this ball pretty far down to almost the goal. And I think we're very close. It sits with the governor, like you said. She accepts it. Guess what? We can start. We'll create tens of thousands of jobs. And we're going to change how we live and travel and celebrate life in our city.
Well, she hasn't quite gotten it yet because she has to wait for the office to turn it over to her first. But
she has it.
Then she'll be able to do it. So what do you think about the time that it's taken us to get to this point, Wayne? You were just telling me before we went on air some stories about what life was like when you were a very young man and how different the transportation situation was. But as far as I can remember, we've been talking about this issue with some form of a transit system, and here we are decades and decades later. Is this time really going to be the time that we're able to do it?
I think this is the time. And like Kirk said, you know, like anything new, people have some resistance to it. People are afraid of change. But I think early on in the history of our planning process, people made the decision they wanted to see certain things about Oahu. One of the key phrases that you hear is keep the country country. And it's an important phrase. I think it's a commitment that we want certain parts of our island, the North Shore, the Windward Coast, to remain primarily rural. We wanted to maintain agriculture in the Central Plateau. And to do these things, we had to decide where growth was going to occur. And that growth was to occur along the southern shore of Oahu. And that to accommodate that, it would have to expand westward. And to make all that work, you would need a high-capacity transit system. And that was realized early on. Multiple attempts, as Kirk has said, but I think this is the one that's going to succeed.
Have you seen any shifts in opinion by some who are opposed and now are reconciling themselves to this particular system, Kirk?
No, I think people are pretty entrenched. They either are for it or against it. I don't see a lot of shifting. I do think that people are becoming a little bit more accepting that, yeah, we're going to build it because we've really fought so hard to get it this far. But, you know, the lines are kind of drawn and people are on one side of the issue or the other side of the issue. At the end of the day, I keep trying to appeal to those who are against this project. that this is about really respecting the Aina. It is about a smaller footprint. It's not about paving more of our land with asphalt and concrete, and it's about allowing people to get out of their cars and not consuming a lot of oil and polluting the air. And I keep saying it's a lifestyle change to me, and I keep thinking maybe that will move some people. I haven't seen it happen, but that's the appeal that we're making.
Well, for those of you listening, if you were opposed to rail, have you changed your mind even a little bit? Are you reconciled to the proposed system, not proposed, but the system that it looks like we're going to have? We'd like to hear from you. 941-3689, if you're on Oahu, that's the number to call. 877-941-3689, if you call us from the neighbor islands. And yes, you can weigh in on this too. The Office of Environmental Quality Control has been analyzing the FEIS. Specifically, what were they looking for?
No, I think, and Wayne can jump in on this too, but I think, you know, an environmental review process is exactly that. It's a process. It says, tell us every impact your project is going to have in your community. And the project we're talking about is an elevated line that's going to go 20 miles, 21 stations from Kapolei into Ala Moana. It's not an analysis of an at-grade or a below-grade system. And they want to make sure that every possible issue was raised in terms of impacts and that they were addressed. You don't have to solve them. You just have to address them. It is all about disclosure, and that's about all it's about.
And all the public comment that was taken.
And that's right,
weighing
in, because you want that. You want to say, what about this? What about that? We want to make sure. The federal government wants to make sure. The state wants to make sure. And we want to make sure that we do really, one, raise every potential issue, and that we then talk about every potential issue. And we think we did that because, you know, we started the DEIS back in 2006. It's 2010. This has not been rushed through.
No, it's been actually a five-year project in all of this.
Yep.
But
know,
with 30,000 comments that came in through the draft EIS, that's a lot of comments to wade through.
It is, and it resulted in a lot of letters back to those who commented. I know because I signed every one of them. And so that's a lot of letters to go back. It wasn't all 30,000. I think it numbered in the range of about,
Okay, a lot.
A lot. So bottom line, though, I think to add to what Kirk was saying about the EIS, you know, the EIS, there are certain statutory requirements as to what the EIS has to address, both on the federal level for the NEPA requirement and for the state 343. And in both cases, you know, the fact that we have a released FEIS is a statement from the federal government, from the Federal Transit Administration, that the FEIS for the NEPA purpose has satisfied all the NEPA requirements for a final environmental impact statement. And otherwise, they wouldn't have let us release it publicly.
I had a listener contact me before the show and said, you know, we haven't been able to even get a bike route in all this time. I mean, decades we've been talking about that, too. What made anybody think that we'd have agreement on the rail route in any shorter time? How would you answer him?
Well, no, I think we've had much progress on bike routes as well. I think this is a much larger project, so there are much more moving parts to it, and it takes much more agreement across the board. I have to hand it to the project team, led by Toru Hamayasu, who's my deputy director, and you know our public information team, of which Scott Ishikawa, who's here in the studio with us, is a member of. But they've really, really outreach to the public to gather in the maximum public participation possible. I mean, we've met with literally hundreds, maybe even thousands of groups individually. We've had multiple public hearings. I don't think it's unprecedented, the amount of public outreach that this project entailed.
2030 is your planning horizon year, and by when we expect to have 200,000 extra people on Oahu.
In the Eva plane.
Yes. And construction is scheduled to be complete by 2019, though.
Yep.
Is there still any confusion over the route and over what part is going to be completed when?
I don't think there's any confusion. The
people
the route
really are
is,
pretty straight about,
you know,
it right
pretty
now.
Pretty straight about the route and where it starts and where it ends. And so.
And by maybe, what, when it will be completed?
In segments. We actually can talk about when different parts are going to be completed going down the
route.
Well,
that's what I'm asking. I mean, do people really understand by when they are going to be complete?
I think we've talked about it as much as we can. We've disclosed it in various documents. But if you're asking me whether the general public, you know, all 100% of the people who live on this island, I can't answer that. But we've attempted to explain to people in each segment when we expect to start and when we expect to complete it. And as you mentioned, the entire system is completed in 2019, which really is just 9 years away to build this. I mean, so while it seems a long ways off, in the long run, it isn't. And once built, it keeps giving back to the community for a century from now.
Even 2019, though, you know, that's not a whole lot of relief for leeward commuters for quite a while. And they're going to be slogging through traffic, and you're asking them to be mindful of what life is going to be like for their children and for their grandchildren. But we live in such an era of immediate gratification. I mean, this really is the iPhone generation. Quick fixes. Do you think leeward residents and all the rest of us, taxpayers, are going to be able to stay the course with this project and keep looking at the prize down the way?
Well, I guess how I'd answer that question is I'd say, what's the alternative? To if we don't build it, you know one thing, by 2030 you have 200,000 more people out in the Everplane. It takes maybe an hour, hour and a half to come into town right now each way. Think about it, with 200,000 more people, and there won't be another freeway, in my guess, and I don't think whether the people of this island would support another freeway. So as a result, they would be sitting in gridlock. It would probably be 3 hours each way every day. That's 6 hours on the road, burning gas, taking money out of their pocket. And so I think the answer is, yes, you have to be patient. Of course, you know, people like Wayne and others are working other types of transportation improvements. There's a lot more connectivity now out in the Kapolei area. The North-South Road, the Kapolei Parkway that Wayne has been working hard on will bring people from the Eva area into Kapolei, and they can get on the freeway at different places. But yes, at the end of the day, they're all getting on the same freeway.
Right, and I'm wondering if there's anything that you have planned to de-escalate some of that frustration as we move through the next 10 years.
Well, I think there is, but first of all, one has to remember, even if there are other types of actions that are being taken, those will also disrupt traffic for a while as it's being constructed, and it's not an immediate fix as well. So no matter what we do, people have to show patience. Right. And so this one has the one project that has the potential payoff in the long run. Now, one of the things I'd like to stress is that when you look at the Oahu Regional Transportation Plan, which is the long-range plan up to year 2030, it contains almost as much dollar amount in terms of highway improvements as well as the transit project. It is not a single mode type of plan. It's the whole plan for Oahu is a multi-mode plan, which encompasses transit, highways, looking at ways to manage demand, looking at bikes, looking at pedestrians, looking at efficiencies of flows. It's a truly multimodal approach, and that's the only way we're going to do it. There's no silver bullet that will solve everything.
Multimodal and integrated.
Yeah. Integrated and multimodal.
Okay,
yes.
We have a caller on the line. Let's take a caller first, and then we'll continue our conversation. Ross has been waiting patiently, calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Ross. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Yes, I live on the windward side. I drive a car, and I am for rail. I would like to applaud the leadership and these gentlemen for pushing this forward. I think it is the transportation of the future and will be needed in Hawaii. I don't think any of the communities and cities around the U.S. that have rail would want to give it up. And I believe that it's good for people up and down the strata, including those who are not able to drive, not of age to drive, unable to drive for a variety of reasons, or can't afford to drive. And I believe that this is certainly the system and is necessary for the integration that these people are talking about. I was also curious about different forms of spurs and types of things that they're doing on the mainland, that like e-transit, I know Wayne's familiar with, that uses solar power on the entire part of the train, including the windows, to collect solar power to run it. And I was curious how much more emphasis they have on that.
Ross, thanks very much for the question. So we've got some solar attached to all this, or in the way that he would like to see it?
In the current plan, we don't have solar attached to the project. But we think that that's the future. As things develop in the future, one of the things, this system is electrical. It runs on electricity. And it doesn't matter where the electricity is generated, whether it be at a coal-fired plant or whether it be wind power or whether it be biodiesel or whether it be solar panels. So in this case here, as technology develops and as infrastructure for alternative generation of electricity develops, this system will be able to take advantage of those things.
We're going to go now to Larry calling us from Kailua. And if you'd like to be next, the phone lines are open at 941-368-9877. 941-3689. Larry, aloha and welcome to Town Square.
Well, aloha. Thank you. Well, I just want to make a comment in that, you know, I was for this rail initially, and I've since changed my mind. I'm dead set against it. I'm not going
what
to
happened?
Go into all the reasons why, but I just want to ask a question, and that is, why can't we consider a revamp of the rest of the transportation system for the rest of the island? Because I'm in Kailua now. There's no way the rail is going to help me. And I'd like to see us go back to a system of trolleys like we had here in Honolulu before World War II. I don't think that system's been talked about enough. There's going to be an awful lot of disruption.
All right, Larry, let's get an answer for you on that, because it's interesting that you've changed your mind about all of this, and whereas you haven't given us exactly the reasons why you've changed your mind, he's suggesting, Wayne, that, you know, why don't we use something that we've been talking about for a while as well, that was used, that's older technology. But moreover, he's going back to the argument of, hey, it's not going to help me very much.
Well, first of all, let's address the at-grade issue. Which is what he's talking about when he's talking about trolley systems in traffic. And one of the things that the at-grade has limitations on is that it mixes with traffic. And so if the traffic is very congested, well, the trolley is limited also by that congestion. So by doing an elevated system, we actually separate ourselves from the congestion. The other thing is that if we put something at-grade, we're going to take lanes away from traffic. And so we're going to have a definite impact on the traffic that's already there. Whereas we do elevated, we'll leave the traffic lanes alone and add capacity to the system. Now, in terms of what does it do for Kailua? First of all, if you drive into Honolulu, one of the things that you'll find is that you won't be driving into complete gridlock. So you'll be able to at least move around in Honolulu when you get there. Secondly, one of the things, because we also operate the bus, our department operates the bus and the handyvan system. One of the things we hear the most is that they like more bus service into the windward areas and would love to provide that. But right now, all our buses are getting consumed in this very, very congested primary corridor because we're trying to keep up the headways or the spacing of the buses. And because they're being delayed by traffic, they're mixing just like the trolleys would. We're having to use more and more buses there. Now, by putting a rail system down the corridor, it'll liberate a lot of these buses. We can use them for better feeder service, and we can also use them to augment the system that's going out to the windward side, benefiting the Kailua, Kaneohe, and other windward residents as well.
So what you're saying is you're looking at taking these resources and reapportioning them to a higher and better use?
Right. We're looking forward to being able to do that.
I had 2 points I want to make. One, at grade, too. If he's talking about putting trolleys at grade, and you're talking about more cars and more congestion as more people move here, you're just talking about moving even slower. So there's less incentive for people to get out of a car and go ride the trolley. The other thing, though, about Kailua, it's not going to benefit me. We hear that all around the island where the rail doesn't go. We are an island community. In the old days, we thought of ourselves as one big neighborhood, no matter what part of the island we lived on. I think that's what makes us so special here in Hawaii. And so I think we need to step back and look at how does it benefit the entire community. Us who live on the eastern side, I live in Manoa. I don't complain about the fact that we're repaving the Pali Highway, the Likelike, or building H3, I think that benefits the people on the windward side, and that's a good thing for all of us because we need an integrated transportation system that links all parts of the island and that truly works. We are a capital city, a beautiful city in the middle of the Pacific, and we all need to remind ourselves of that. And while we may not all benefit immediately in our neighborhood, it's good for all of us.
A couple of months ago, there was a flap over having to potentially move a runway. And there were some people who said that, well, gee, that sort of shakes my credibility or the credibility of this a little bit and their faith in this. Did the city check the age of the topographical map that they were using, and did the FAA participate from the start in the talks over that proposed route?
In fact, I mean, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding on this issue. But what you're talking about here is a runway protection zone issue. It's an area in front of runways where planes land and take off and make sure that the glide path is such that everyone is safe and protected. And we knew that part of our rail system intruded in just the corner, just a skosh into the corner of the core area. And we thought we were working towards an agreement with the the FAA and the State Department of Transportation that would do a couple of things. One, we're saying maybe we just move the runway on the Mackay side just a little bit down, which would then shift that glide path on the Malka end where our rail line was going. Or perhaps we could change the types of aircraft that use this runway, because the runway we're talking about is for smaller aircraft, and only in certain instances do other aircraft use it. And we thought maybe we have other runways at the airport that we could enter into an agreement. We were told earlier this year that just would not work, or last fall, and so we had to go to a plan B. And that plan B ended up being that we moved the rail line just a little bit, about, 300 feet? Malka.
But was the FAA in on this with you from the very beginning?
We were talking with the FAA all along, thinking that perhaps we had an agreement. But at the end of the day, it fell apart. And that happens from time to time, you know. But there was discussions. We were aware of it.
Okay.
I mean, this was not a shock. It was a disappointment, though, because we'd much rather have left the route there. But in the end, it was a minor adjustment, and we're moving forward.
Now, something that's not going to take a minor adjustment, though, that I want to get to, and that's okay. We can leave that there unless you have anything particular.
Well, no, I just wanted to add one thing to it. What Kirk says is entirely correct. I just want to add that the state DOT, Airports Division, and FAA worked very closely with us on this, and we really appreciate all the cooperation they showed us in working this thing out.
Yep.
So, you know, it was really not an adversarial relationship. We just worked this thing out. It took a lot of hard work, but we got it done.
Something that's not an issue that's going to go away anytime soon is the issue of Hawaiian remains. Remains along the route, has that been resolved with the federal government? Isn't there a programmatic agreement that's yet to be worked out between the federal government and the Natural Historic Preservation, State Department of Land and Natural Resources? Isn't that yet to come?
Well, the programmatic agreement addresses, among several other things, the burials. And what's happened here is that really there are four signatories. There's Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, the Federal Transit Administration, my department, the DTS, Department of Transportation Services, and the State Historic Preservation Division. Those are the four signatories to this agreement. Three of the four are satisfied. The State Historic Preservation Division is still looking this over.
So it's still open?
It's still open.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I want to get to, is that this thing hasn't been done completely yet. We're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Tonight we're talking about the final EIS on the Honolulu Rail Transit Project with City Managing Director and soon-to-be Acting Mayor Kirk Caldwell and City Transportation Director Wayne Yoshioka. The FEIS was approved in June by the Federal Transit Administration and submitted to the state. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about money to help pay for this rail project. Are you concerned about how taxpayers will fund the project? Call us. The phone lines are open, 941-3689 on Oahu, 877-941-3689, if you call us from the neighbor islands. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Making informed health choices for you and your family can be tough. On The Body Show, we'll try to make them a little easier to understand with the latest information and knowledgeable guests, and we'll take your calls, too. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, board-certified internist, and I'll see you Monday at 5 on The Body Show.
The relationships that I feel that I get out of listening to some of the programs, those might be things that are here in our islands and stories about things that are happening in other countries and other places, and I feel that there are bridges being built between us, and I like that.
Listener supported, radio with vision. Listen and see.
This is Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. The city hopes the Honolulu Rail Project will actually break ground maybe as early as late this year. But first, the state must approve the final environmental impact statement. Last month, the Federal Transportation Administration signed off on it. The State of Office of Environmental Quality Control now has it. And then soon the governor will have it. She says she wants a full financial analysis and will soon contract with the company to do it. Joining us tonight are City Managing Director Kirk Caldwell and City Transportation Director Wayne Yoshioka, and you too. Our number is 941-3689 if you call us from Oahu, and from the neighbor islands, a toll-free call at 877-941-3689, or you can shoot me a tweet at BKOZHPR, that's BKOZHPR. The Sierra Club is still discussing their official position, but they did tell me earlier today that they hope that the governor will take no more time than necessary to review the FEIS. On her radio program, though, last week, she said that she wants to contract for a financial analysis of the project. The city's been saying that's unnecessary. Do you view the governor as an impediment to this process?
I do, actually. And here's my comment, Bethan. This is something that really deserves a lot of discussion. I would dare anyone listening to find an FEIS where there was an independent financial review done by the accepting authority, the state of Hawaii, ever. Because I don't think you'll find one. It's not part of the EIS process. It's not required by federal or state statute. It's required by the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, in their analysis, because we're asking the federal government to give us money to build this project. In fact, the federal government has committed now to give us $1.55 billion. And just like you or I, if we invest into a company, we want to see the numbers. And so they said, before we give you the money, we want to make sure your project is financially viable. So we're going to crunch those numbers. So what did they do? They hired three different entities, third parties, to do independent financial reviews. Booz Allen Hamilton, one of the great international consulting firms, Porter & Associates, one of the largest engineering firms, and one other company to crunch our numbers. All three came back and told the FTA they weren't working for us, we weren't paying them. Their numbers are good. They're in the ballpark. We then went to the business roundtable. Don Horner was the chair at that point. He crunched the numbers. We asked him to do that, but they don't work for us in the city. And they came back and said, our numbers are in the ballpark. Not only that, they couldn't believe that we had a $1.3 billion contingency in the project. About one-fifth of the total cost is a contingency for any potential overruns. And when the business roundtable crunched the numbers, they thought we were just going to get about $900 million from the federal government. So they've done what they need to do. Now, the governor has latched on to this, saying, I think I need to do a financial review before I accept it. But you know, about a month and a half ago, the governor accepted an FEIS for the Mauna Kea Telescope project. It's over $1 billion. She required no independent financial review before she signed off.
So your point with all this is that you think that maybe she's trying a stalling tactic?
I think she is. I hope not, but I think she is.
I mean, because her point is that, you know, we've got one pool of taxpayers, and that same pool is being asked to pay for sewer repairs in the coming years, already paying more for water and sewer rates, property taxes are going up, motor vehicle registrations already went up. All of those things that are coming from one pool of taxpayers, and she says that this may be a real burden.
Well, a couple of things. She's the governor of the state of Hawaii. We're talking about a city function, and everything you just mentioned were all city functions. It seems she wants to now step into a city function and determine whether what we're doing in our city is financially viable.
No, but she's talking about one pool of people who have to pay for all these things, whether they're city or whether they're state. It's coming out of the one pocket of everybody's
wallet. But here's my answer. Well, we know we can build this. It's financially viable. We're raising the money through a 0.5% excise tax. It's going to raise about $3.7 billion. The tax expires by operational law in 2022 at the end of the year, and we're getting $1.55 billion. And these three independent, world-class agencies have all said that our project is financially viable. Now, she wants to do another study to make the same determination when it's not required in the acceptance of an FEIS. I don't know if she understands the FEIS process. I hope she does. You know, I worked hand-in-hand with her on the Super Ferry by trying to allow the FEIS to be done after the fact, because I really believed in the ferry. But I question now that she's raising this in relationship to accepting the FEIS, because there's no law, state or federal, that requires that.
Okay, but on her radio, she was saying a number of things last week, including the fact that the city has not submitted an updated financial plan to the federal government. Wayne, you're a signatory on the FEIS. Is that true?
It's not necessary. The point is that in the FEIS, there is a financial plan that's dated August 2009. A financial plan is a dynamic document. It doesn't sit idle at any time, and we're constantly modifying it. Now, she's saying we have to submit an updated plan. We do at certain junctures. this is not a juncture that we need to do so yet, but we're in constant communications with FTA, and they certainly know what we're doing through the project management oversight consultant. Every month, the project management oversight consultant that's hired by the FTA comes over or does a conference call with us and reviews what we've been doing for the past month, including financial data and things like that. So, again, this is a constant back-and-forth interaction that we have with the federal government, which doesn't require us to do a full-blown report.
Okay,
now, when we go into final design, which we are not ready to do yet, when we go into final design, we do have to submit a report, and we will do so at that time.
Okay, so are you saying, one second, with Wen, because I want to follow up on this, that her comment that the financial plan that was submitted last August was essentially nixed by the federal government because the plan was shown not to be able to pay for herself.
That is not true.
That's completely wrong.
That's completely false. If that were true, they would not have let us release the FEIS.
If it were true, they wouldn't have committed $1.55 billion and released another $35 million. They gave us another $35 million to continue work. But Bethann, here's the point that's kind of specious in her comment. You know when you give a financial plan? It's not when we want to provide it. I would love to do one right now to show that, hey, in fact, we're doing even better. It's the FTA who requests an updated financial plan. They're the ones who drive each of these plans, and they ask for it at the critical points that they feel they need to know it because they're investing the money, not the state of Hawaii. It's part of that investment requirement. They're saying, we'll tell you when we want one, and when we ask you, give it to us.
Right. But not until we ask you is what you're saying. Okay,
exactly.
We've got callers on the line. I want to see what our audience has to say. Going first now to Nathaniel calling us from downtown. Nathaniel, thanks for your patience. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you so much. Yeah. This is a little unrelated to rail, but I think that, you know, Kirk and the administration have been doing a good job. But I just kind of wanted to ask a question of the managing director and just kind of see where he thinks Honolulu is going. I mean, he's going to become mayor in the next week or so, and I kind of wanted to...
Well, you know what, Nathaniel? I'm actually going to ask you to hold that for another time because right now I want to confine the discussion to rail. So thank you very much for the call. I'm sorry you had to wait, but we're going to move on now to Patrick calling us from Pearl Ridge. Aloha, Patrick. Welcome to Town Square.
Having me on. First, I want to say thanks to Bethann for doing this. I think this is a pretty important topic, and I'm glad you guys went right to the newsmakers to get some opinions on this.
And second,
I was curious. I never hear anybody talk about the potential for money from, like, naming the stations. On the mainland, a lot of the public facilities, right, there's naming rights for stadiums, there's naming rights for town halls, for things like that. And a couple years ago, UH got, like, $20 million for naming the business school. Is there any potential for naming of the stations?
You're a real marketing person, aren't you?
Well, I just see this stuff happening all over the mainland, and I wonder, why can't we do it here?
Okay, a quick question, and somebody who has got the eye on an income stream potential. Yeah. Is there anything to this?
There's been discussions about naming the stations. There's also been discussions about naming them Hawaiian names or place names, whether it be Waipahu. But I think it's something that we could look at, and obviously it has worked on the mainland, whether you name they actually have named stations on the mainland, and stadiums and everything else in between.
But whether we have a Motorola station or not is not something
but
we're
Wayne,
talking
have,
about.
But,
right
Wayne,
we
haven't made a determination, and I think we'd want to be very sensitive to the sense of place that
we'd want to talk
live
to the community as well on this.
Right.
Okay. All
right.
Well, Patrick, thank you for the idea, and certainly I'm sure you'll consider
it. But tell Patrick we'll take his money if he wants to name a bike rack or something.
I'll let you talk to him about that later. At a Tuesday's Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs Summit on Physical Infrastructure, we heard U.S. House Transportation Committee Chair Jim Oberstar via live video conference. And he called rail the premier transit project in the entire country. And I'm sure that made you very happy because it showed up in a press release that afternoon. Now, aside from that praise, though, does the city know really, truly how much the federal government is going to give you? Is it really going to be the 1.5?
Well, that's been the indication from the Obama administration. And that when they made this announcement, it's the first time we actually heard from the Obama administration itself. Where we have been getting support consistently all along is from Congress, and particularly from our senior senator, Daniel Kainoi, who continually repeats this mantra. You know, the stars are aligned. It's now or never. You got a president from Hawaii who, when he visits, actually causes gridlock. You got a senior senator chair of the appropriations fully committed to building this project. And you got a mayor who's put his political life on the line when he ran in 2008 to get it here. So let's build it. So I think I put my trust and faith in Senator Inouye throughout the almost 50 years he served all of us. When he makes a comment, when he makes a commitment, he delivers. In fact, I think that's his slogan, Dan delivers. But I believe he will, in fact, make good on that commitment. And in the House, we've got guys like Oberstar who sits on a committee that's critical that I think will be seeing the money forthcoming.
All right, we've got another caller I'd like to bring into the conversation. Elaine, calling us from Aina Haina. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. I wanted to I was just out of Barbara's Point, and I noticed those nice rails in the asphalt and that nice train that used to run up and down, the Oahu train. And I really don't know why that couldn't be viable as an incentive. If you take one lane away, it's an incentive to ride the rail. However, what I really want to know is who is your customer? And if it's a morning and evening commute, who rides this expensive vehicle during the day? And because H3 took so long, what is the calculated overtime to build this monstrosity and blight on our island?
I think we can infer from the last part of your comment that you don't like this idea.
No, I love rail on the ground. It makes a lot of sense. People can use it right away. And we can use all that money to build more track to serve more people, because right now it's not serving anybody, too many people at all. And I don't believe that people are going to go and hop on that with their Christmas gifts laden down. They're going to be driving their car.
Well, you know,
somebody else riding it, not them.
It's a good question.
Elaine, thanks very much. So she's really saying, yeah, you know, if you're coming with all this stuff, and that's been a question we've been talking right about for at least the past 5 or 7 years that we've been talking about rail on this program, even longer for a general conversation. What do you still tell people when they say, you know, you're not going to get people riding it as you say you are?
Daily ridership is projected to be 116,000 riders every day.
Right,
and I heard the same argument.
But you know, what do you
say? Here, I can only do it by analogy. I worked for Senator Inouye in the 70s without Metro in D.C. Same argument she's saying. No one's going to ride it. It's too hot during the summer. And it is hot in D.C. It was over 100 degrees last week in D.C. It's too cold in the winter. No one's going to ride it. Went back when my wife was chair of the FDIC under Bill Clinton with Metro. Guess what? Everyone's riding it. So I think this is an argument that they believe they won't. But when you have a choice to get out of your car, if you're sitting in your car going out to Eva and it takes an hour and a half each way every day, and you see that elevated train going by you, and you know you can get to town consistently, reliably every day in 42 minutes, some people are going to get out of their cars. We believe 116,000 people will, and it'll take 40,000 cars off the road that would otherwise be there by 2030. So I hear this.
But remember, that's 2030. I mean, in her mind, when you're talking to somebody now, and it's still 2010, and that's a 20-year projection.
But she's asking whether people are going to ride it. And my point is, we believe they will. Our modeling projections show they will. And by my own personal experience, I've seen it with my own two eyes.
Yeah, really, what you're saying is when it gets hot enough in the kitchen, people are going to leave, i.e. jump on the train and go.
And I think it's hot enough right now out there. I think people, if we gave them the choice, if we would have built this in 92, the monstrosity she talks about, which was going to be elevated, guess who would have been riding it? 100,000, 200,000 people, maybe. Maybe we would have even gone to other areas by now. But we killed a project that was going to be about $1.8 billion in $92.
We know what happened with that one.
We have status quo.
Wayne wants to answer some of this, too. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, Bethann, I'd just like to add, you know, you were asking about projections, but look at today. Today, believe it or not, Hawaii, Honolulu, it has the fourth highest per capita ridership in the nation. And that's comparing us not only to cities with all bus, but cities with rail transit as well. We have the fourth highest per capita ridership in the nation. And all you have to do is get on our buses and take a look at them. They're full, and they're not only full during the morning and afternoon rush hours. I know because I ride the bus myself. And there is that demand out there, and it will only escalate as we move into the future, and we need this high-capacity system to handle the demand that we fully expect to occur in the future.
It's a good
point.
All,
do you also see this, though, as being emblematic of transit equity, where you have something that people from all walks of life can use. I mean, in some cities, the only people who use the buses are the people who can't afford to have a car. It's not a matter of choice. It's simply a matter of reality. But what you're suggesting is that in something like this, that there's going to be much more transportation equity.
And we have that now. We're not like many, many cities in which the only people you see on the transit are those who have no choice. Here you do have a lot of what we call choice riders.
Well, I'm talking about the bus. I'm saying exactly about the bus and that having that leveraged into a rail situation.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to take a few more callers. We have Mark calling us from Kapahulu. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you for having my call. Appreciate it. I've traveled quite a bit to other countries internationally, and I've had countries where rail, I thought it was an excellent idea. But the one observation I've noticed is that in the countries that I've been to, when you see rail, it seems part and parcel with bicycles. And there seems to be a very prominent bicycle-type culture in terms of transportation. My question is, during this whole conversation about rail, I don't see this other side of the coin, which I've seen like part and parcel in these other countries that I've been to. That's just common sense. So my question is, we don't have sufficient bike lanes here, not a riding culture here in terms of bicycles. Can you please address that issue?
Thanks very much. Well, I know we talked a little bit about this at the top of the show when I asked you about the call that I received before we went on air. But looking at a complete change in culture, I mean, not just fitting it into where we are now, but actually changing the culture, I think that really is what Mark is asking about. Wayne?
Well, you know, one of the things that the Hanneman administration has done is really focus on this multimodal approach to transportation. And one piece of that was to update the Oahu Bicycle Master Plan. It hadn't been updated since the year 2000. And we've come in and worked on it over the past year. We're almost ready to release the final version of it. But what it does is it looks comprehensively over the island of Oahu and proposes doable projects. You know, one of the key things is that you can have a nice bike plan that looks beautiful on paper, but if it's not buildable in a reasonable time frame, it really has no use. And the focus right now is implementable projects that we can have. And we have also made it integrated with the future rail system. So one of the things that the plan does look at is making sure that the bike routes that are being planned have connections, very strong connections, to all the transit stations so that it can be a truly multimodal and integrated system.
Just what we talked about earlier.
Right.
So there you go. Thanks very much, Mark, for the call. We are going to take another short break. Tonight we're talking about the final EIS on the Honolulu Rail Transit Project. It was approved in June by the Federal Transit Administration. Now it's with the state. When we come back, we'll talk more with City Managing Director and soon-to-be Acting Mayor Kirk Caldwell and City Transportation Director Wayne Yoshioka, and you too. Do you still have concerns over the rail project? And have you read any of the FEIS? Call us at 941-3689, 941-FM89, or you can send me a tweet at BecauseHPR. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. You're listening to Town Square.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Pacific Home, an island lifestyle store featuring indoor and outdoor furniture, lighting, green products, and design services. Located in Kaka'ako at 420 Ward Avenue, pacific-home.com.
I looked up at the sky and I felt the storm's great eye up there, fixing its cold stare on all of us below.
Strange Tales by Haruki Murakami and Amy Bender on the next Selected Shorts from PRI, Public Radio International.
Saturday afternoon at 2.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. You're listening to Town Square. The city hopes the Honolulu Rail Project will actually break ground, maybe even as early as late this year. But first, the state has to approve the final environmental impact statement. Last month, the Federal Transportation Administration signed off on it. The State Office of Environmental Quality Control has it. And then soon, the governor will be getting it. She says she wants to contract a full financial review before she decides what she's going to do, whether she'll sign off on it or not. There are many aspects to the FEIS the Office of Environmental Quality Control is reviewing. And then, of course, the government will want to have it reviewed. And we've been talking a little bit about this. Kirk Caldwell says, well, that's just a stalling tactic. We've got 5 months until the new governor will take over. Do you really see time slipping away until we can actually break ground? I mean, are you looking at this? You've said that she's an impediment. You said that this is a stalling tactic. And now is it just a matter that we've got to let the next 5 months go by?
I hope not. You know, I haven't given up. And I think the mayor has not given up. We'll continue to work to see if we can't get her to actually review it and sign it without an independent financial review. I am concerned with the precedent that the governor sets, because the governor is an accepting authority for many FEISs, and having done a financial review, which she says she wants to do on this project, how is a determination going to be made for projects going forward, whether it be a hotel, a harbor, an observatory, a road? All of these are burdens and in some cases huge financial burdens on the public that she represents. And so where is the determination and distinction going to be made? I think it's very dangerous, and she is setting new precedent and new ground. And so I'd like to be able to sit down with her and see if we can't reach an accommodation that would not result in an independent financial review, have her look at what has been done by these other great authorities. I mean, Booz Allen, as I said, has the experts. There are no better ones than them.
But, you know, a lot of people neither saw the recession coming nor were prepared for it. This wasn't part of anybody's plan. And as you look out over, you know, the next 10 years or so, and now we know that, you know, the value of money can change, the value of commodities can change, what goes in people's pocket is going to change potentially. Do you really expect that we can project out that not say that it's a good idea to have not just that contingency out there for that part, but maybe we need a contingency on the contingency, because certainly we have just come through two of the worst years anybody's come through in decades.
Probably in the history since the Great Depression. And here's a good point to make. Number one, in the worst recession since the Great Depression, we're at 99.6% of where we're supposed to be in terms of the revenue to build this project. In the worst recession. So we're still very close to our target. But number two, in this very slow economy, we have been putting out bids for this project. We've actually awarded two RFPs. And those two RFPs have saved the taxpayers of this city $150 million because people are hungry. Contractors are hungry. Bidders are hungry for work.
So they're lowering
their price. So we're actually getting more done with the money we have. So, yes, you're right. We're in a recession, and guess what? We've saved $150 million with two RFPs, and one more is going to be coming out this fall, maybe two. And we're hopeful those will come in lower, too. That is a tremendous saving. So you are right. You know, things go up and down.
Flip me for a second and look at the job issue, because one of the impacts that you say that rail is going to have is that, you mentioned this earlier,
right,
10,000 jobs, 10,000 workers in direct, indirect, induced jobs every year. Every year until when? Because isn't it tough to say or make the assumption that it's going to stay relatively stable? And then there's the fact that we're going to come to a time where rail is done. And if that's in 9 years from now, that's still only 9 years from now.
Here's the other point, though, that I didn't mention. We have not discussed today, and that's transit-oriented development. Basically, that's development around each of the train stations. They're like little economic hubs, really. And in every city where they build these rail projects, whether they're below ground or above grade, they stimulate what happens where the stations are. D.C. has had $16 billion worth of transit or development investments since they completed their train system in the early 80s.
We're not D.C. We're a different kind of animal.
Yes. So Paul Brubaker, I mean, to the extent you want to believe him or not, I think he's a good economist. He's the chair of the Council of Revenues, has said that our project will generate over a $20 billion worth of investment over the life of TOD. Now, that's going out decades. But that's $20 billion on top of the 5.5 that's going directly into the construction. And for me, I think right now we have unemployment around, 5.6%, much better than the other neighbor islands. And I think the reason in part is this huge military construction that has started and is ongoing, $25 billion worth. And I think that's making the trough, the dip, a little less worse. And so I believe, one, building the rail system, and then decades later continuing to revitalize our urban core around transit stations will create great economic activity, and actually will ensure that as we do go through these ups and down cycles, that the down trough will be a lot less. So I think that kind of gets at your question about happens.
But saying that, you know, we're going to have 10,000 jobs every year, what I'm really saying to you is, how can you be so sure of those? Because you're going to have drops, you're going to have people laid off, you're going to have changes. We don't know necessarily that these hubs are going to be exactly as they are in other cities because we are a little different here. And some of that part on the Eva Plain may or may not be built.
Bethann, I think it's important to note that the job estimation is for the construction of this project.
Yeah.
So the project is funded. We can fund this project. We can build this project. So what this project does is that in an economy that lacks large projects, and that's the reason why so many people are out of work, it provides the opportunity for employment during this down period.
But I guess my point is when I see every year until when, and to say that, you know, construction is done?
Correct.
Okay.
So we know about, you know, in terms of the amount of money, we're going to be spending hundreds of millions every year.
But it doesn't say that.
That's
the part I think where people are a little confused by saying how much exponentially do you think that this is going to spin off? That was really my question. We've got some callers on the line. Let's take them. Going now to Randy calling us from downtown. Aloha, Randy. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you very much. The reason I'm calling is because I'd like to know about if they could reiterate a little bit about lessons learned from projects that have problems. It's easy to talk about projects that worked well. In particular, two things come to mind. One is I lived in D.C. and Los Angeles, and in D.C. I fully agree that the metro system is great, but it's basically as long as you have parking. The Vienna Metro Station, which I'm sure you're familiar with, is a great one. When it was built, it had a huge number of parking spaces, and they filled up a lot faster than they thought. People will use it as long as they can drive there and feel they're safe parking their car. And the other one is in Los Angeles. The system has been really underutilized much more than they thought it would be. So I'm wondering if lessons learned from the problems of the Los Angeles system and the D.C. system with parking and things like that have been utilized or have been used in the planning of the new system that you have. Thank you.
Well, Wayne, do you want to answer him?
Sure. I think one of the things that, in fact, we do benefit from the experience of other systems. And, in fact, one of the things that the FTA works into their evaluation of our system is the experiences of other systems, and in fact makes their evaluation much more stringent when they look at our system. And because of that, when they say, okay, you have a system that's workable, or we accept your projections, it's because we have a lot of confidence in that because of the experiences of other systems that they're fully aware of, and they're making sure that we don't make the same mistakes as other systems. Now, in the case of DC, I think the fact that you don't have enough parking shows that the system is very, very successful. And they're just looking to expand their parking. In LA, not all of their lines are underutilized. There are some lines that they have that are very, very well utilized. Maybe the Century line is the only one they have that's underutilized. So, again, I think it's those watching the characteristics of those lines, watching what others have done. It really benefits us.
We had a shy caller. Those are people who don't want to go on the air, who asked the question about the park and ride idea. And this has been built into the entire plan, has it not?
Yes, it has, especially on our key interface points. On the west side, as people come in, we have major parking ride lots at the East Kapolei Station and at the UH West Oahu Station. And at Pearl Highland Center, we have another major, major parking ride where the people coming down from Central Oahu around H2, it will intercept that path and also provide major parking as a parking ride for the system. And right now, the plan is to have these parking rides free.
Yeah.
Roger, thanks very much for calling in with that. Now we have Andy calling us from Kalihi. Aloha, Andy. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. I just had a comment and kind of a question. Seems like if you want to talk about lessons learned, most governments are most successful when they keep projects simple. And it seems like you're adding unnecessary complexity by elevating the road as opposed to just leaving it on the ground, kind of building on what the caller was saying earlier. It seems like it would be cheaper, less burden on the people, get built faster, repairs would cost less. God forbid something were to happen to it, you know, what the repairs would be elevated versus the ground. And it seems like it would be a benefit to the people faster and at a cheaper cost. And how do you justify the elevated part based on that?
All right, Andy, thanks very much. I mean, this is what it squarely comes back to every single time we talk about it. No matter how far along we get in the discussion, it comes back to this business of at grade versus elevation.
Right.
And you know, somebody else saying, it's a great idea, we need it, but why elevate?
I agree. Again, as we've said previously, if you're at grade, you can go no faster than the fastest moving car. And during rush hour right now, a bus goes 7 miles an hour and a car goes at 14 miles an hour. Whether you build at grade or above grade, you're talking about billions of dollars. We're building a system that we want a lot of people to ride. And the only way you're going to get them out of their cars is if they can go quick. If they're not going to go any faster than a bus or a car, why are they going to get out of their car? What's the point? And so you're going to spend billions of dollars for a system that's going to be underutilized. You've heard people today say they want to make sure it's highly utilized. We believe a fast, efficient, reliable system that runs no matter what's happening at grade. Because if there's an accident at grade, the system stops. This guarantees mobility and being rapid no matter what happens at grade. So, again, it's two totally different systems. One goes fast. One goes slow. One could maybe be a little cheaper, but condemnation is much larger because you're condemning more land. You're taking more buildings. You're putting your stations on the ground instead of elevated. And so I'm not even sure whether in the end of the day you really save any money, but you do have a much slower moving system.
We have one more caller that we're going to bring into the conversation saying, I think he wants a little bit more clarification about what you said about being able to bring certain things onto rail. Anna calling us from Kapahulu, asking about suitcases. Is that right, Anna?
Yes, Bethann. I was told by Mr. Yoshioka at one point, I'm concerned because they will not allow suitcases on city buses. So if you want to catch a city bus to transfer onto the rail to the airport, my feeling is it won't make it user-friendly. Thank you.
Which sort of thwarts the idea of it being, you know, well-integrated. So what do you tell her at this point, Wayne?
Well, you know, Bethann, I think, and Anna also, the intent is on a transit system not to have tons of luggage with you. If you do have tons of luggage, I think it's more appropriate to be in a taxi or to have a chartered vehicle taking you to the airport if that's where you're going. I think what's more appropriate is that if you have one suitcase, you can put it in your lap, and that's all we ask on the buses. The bus that you should not occupy two spaces for yourself when, you know, when there
and
are other people
luggage.
On right. And in fact, when I was working in the consulting field, I used to do a lot of trips to the neighbor island and go to the airport often. I'm just carrying my briefcase. That's it. And in that case, I would love to have been able to jump on a transit, take it from downtown to the airport, then not have to drive there and look for parking at the airport, and just hop on the plane. And so I think that's the kind of thing we're looking for, as well as the people who work at the airport. If you have multiple luggage and things like that, you really do belong on a taxi.
Yeah, your real point is it's not going to be all things to all people, but you're trying to make it appropriate for certain uses, and as long as it's used for that purpose, that's what it's going to do in terms of freeing up additional space on the freeway.
Yes.
Okay, we're coming down to the last couple of minutes. I know we've had this conversation many times before. This year, with the way things are playing out and changing, we have an election year coming up, change in the administration that's going to happen. You mentioned earlier that you hope it's not going to be a situation of sit down and wait until we have a new governor. But if you had to say, yes, no, this is going to go forward, and we're going to break ground by the end of the year, what would you say? And I'll let you go first, Wayne.
Well, in terms of breaking ground by the end of the year, I'm not going to make any kind of prediction like that because there are certain things that have to happen. The EIS has to get signed. We have to make sure that the PA gets executed, and we'll need a record of decision. So, again, the point is everybody's working hard to make this happen. We're very close. We think it's going to happen. We just don't know when.
Kirk Caldwell, you got 30 seconds.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. I'm going to work hard to try to see if we can't get the FEIS accepted by the governor so we can start this project sooner than later. If we have to wait till December, then we have to wait to December. But that just means we're putting off creating jobs and not beginning to solve our traffic problems.
Kirk Caldwell, Managing Director of the City of Honolulu and soon to be Acting Mayor. Thanks very much
for being here.
Wayne Yoshioka, City Transportation Director. Thanks so much for joining
us.
Thank you. And you too. And we hope you'll plan to join us next time on Town Square. We're going to talk a little bit differently next time about the value of Hawaii. That's the title of a new collection of essays edited by Craig Howes and John Osorio. We're going to talk about a lot of the very famous people that you know who wrote one of those essays and why and what they see coming up for Hawaii, issues we need to face as we move into the future. That's next time on Town Square, next Thursday at 5. I'll see you then. Take good care. Aloha.